Everybody, welcome to Pro Photo Show. It's episode 211. It's November the 18th, 2024. This is our crazy gear show, and I think we're going to have some good things for you today.
Welcome to the New Web Pro Photography Podcast, where we talk about what's new, what's old, and what works for professional and enthusiast photographers. Find show notes, videos, and more at simfx.com/podcast.
Money. I've got Jason Eldridge. Jason Eldridge is a guest from the original Pro Photo Show roundtables that we had on a lot of times. Good to have you, Jason.
Oh, thanks for the invite. It's been a long time.
It's been a while. Turn your audio down a touch if it's up, because I'm getting a tiny bit of echo on you, Jason. And Jason, you can find over at jasoneldridgephoto.com. Now, we're supposed to be live. Popper, I see you in the live stream there. And yeah, we're going to get some old school and new school today. If you guys are watching live, let us know how you're seeing. We had some technical issues today, but like I said, if you have a problem with the stream, this will be in the podcast feed over at simfx.com/podcast, where you can also find the show notes and all of that good stuff. We are going to talk today about the buyer's guide of gear for 2024. I use a whole bunch of different gear because I like to know about gear and I'm always changing gear. Jason, you're a Nikon guy still, right?
Yes, I've been with Nikon pretty much since 2001. I did have a 2-year stint with Sony, but went back to Nikon. So I've got a little experience outside of Nikon, but not a lot.
Okay, and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about some gadgets today. And I just want to talk mainly, we're coming into this season where at the very least, vendors pretend that everything's on sale. I really kind of feel like they just turn the prices up and then give us a sale. Yeah, it doesn't actually change, but maybe by 10% or so. But I know this is the time of year when a lot of people are, you know, weddings kind of start to wind down. People are refreshing gear and they're trying to take advantage of sales and things like that, depending on what part of the industry you are in. I've been doing a lot of my personal projects, modeling, fashion stuff lately, and then a lot of street photography. Street photography really teaches you about shadow. And if you guys follow the podcast, if you follow here on the channel, you know that I've really been putting a lot of emphasis on shadow and shadow hacking, kind of taking it beyond what we had years ago with the exposed workshops and zones and really digging into the shadow. Jason, you're doing a lot of mostly kind of landscape, wildlife. I know you're doing some workshops. You moved out to Florida there. I moved down to Mexico, the land of magical shadow, and getting into trouble. And you're up there in Florida where things are pretty, I guess they're pretty, you're near the Everglades, I want to say, because I know I've seen a lot of your work coming out of the Everglades.
Yes, I started out in Homestead, which was 5 miles from the Everglades. I'm up in West Palm, which is a little further. But I'll be moving to Jensen Beach within a couple of months, which will be a little further to the Everglades. But still, even then, it's, 2 hours away to the park.
So it's not too bad. I got to go into that. I've been in those areas before, but I've never been able to truly, like, really become an Everglades guy, because it's a whole different level in the Everglades in terms of really getting in deep, is my impression. So definitely, if you guys want to get out there, check out. Can they find your workshops and stuff over at Jason Eldridge Photo?
Yes, they can.
We've done a lot of podcasts recently in the past few months, and I know I've kind of been delaying. This summer, I was busy with new products, getting the new Pictorialist Actions, the new Power Workflow 8 over at simfx.com. A lot of new stuff over there and a lot of videos. I have been trying to consistently produce videos here on the channel, even though I don't always get the podcast out every week. So I know we're a few months behind, which is why I really wanted to do it right today and wrap up the year with kind of a buyer's guide like we always used to do on the old Pro Photo Roundtables, even though we don't have a big panel. But we're going to keep growing the panel. We're going to get these bigger roundtables here on the show. And I just wanted to get Jason on because he's somebody I can rely on, and it's not a huge group of people that I'm managing all the technical things and trying to get the streams going right. And I had enough problems just with that, as Jason will attest to. But Jason, I'm going to try and avoid the past few episodes. We've been talking a lot about AI and how it's really hard to stand out, making posts on our Facebook pages barely get any attention. I mean, I have a page of like 60,000 plus likes, fans, whatever we're calling them these days, that were organically generated over the years, over the past 20 years, I remember, and I think you do too, back in, if we go back to 2009, 2010, the early years of Facebook, if you had a page of with thousands of followers, you would post a photo and in 30 minutes, you'd have hundreds of likes and comments. I mean, like when you subscribe to something, same on YouTube, when you subscribe to something, it wasn't all algorithms deciding what to spam you with. It was you subscribed someone because you wanted to see them and you saw that content. Are you having the same kind of feeling on this, the same experience?
So Facebook, and I see it with Instagram too, because they're pretty much one and the same now, is I'll have a photo that I absolutely love, that I adore, that I've taken the time to craft and finish, and I think it's one of my best, and I'll put it up and I'll get 2, 3, 4 likes.
Exactly.
And I don't have as many followers on my Facebook page. I think it's like 2,000 maybe.
But that still just tells you. I mean, yeah. I got like on SimFX, I've had what, like 60,000 plus. I can do the same thing and literally get like 2 or 3 likes.
Yeah.
And if it's like a really,
my wife will even see it and like it. That'll be one of the 2 or 3 that I get. And that's if I'm lucky enough that she sees it, or I just say, hey, I just posted this Facebook. Make me feel better.
Yeah, and if you have something, or if I have a really pretty model or something like that, maybe I'll get 10 likes. But this is it's frankly almost useless, these pages. Honestly, I feel like Instagram is a little bit better, but not by a lot. It's still mostly algorithm driven. Facebook really seems to be driven at this point by the most ridiculous fake AI image that everybody's, you know, saying, oh, wow, that's amazing. And Facebook knows that it's AI. They completely ignore it because their only goal is to keep you psychologically controlled and glued to that screen. And so you can literally go and just make a fake photo of nature, of the, well, we saw this with the eclipse, huge. Almost all the viral photos of the eclipse this last year, and I would say most of them of the aurora, were completely a fraud. They weren't even photos of anything. They were just generated by AI. And so you had millions of likes and shares on these photos. And then you had, I don't know if you did any photos of the eclipse or of the Northern Lights or anything like that this year, but I saw a lot of guys doing it. And the real photos from actual friends, you know, they got a few likes, they were cool, but nothing like the fake ones. So the first thing I wanted to open up to today's show is, as we come into Christmas, is that photographers need to not be too disheartened. Your photos don't suck that bad. It's our social media networks that suck. And it is very disheartening because you can take what you think is the best photo ever. And especially if you were around in the days when you would post a photo and it's like, hey, shot a wedding this weekend. An hour later, you come back and it's 200 likes, right? Just because friends and they shared it and their family and friends, like there was real engagement happening and it's zero. And I know there's all these internet marketers saying, oh, you just have to know how to play the algorithms, all this stuff, and you can get the videos. Yeah, there's ways to do it, but really you have to make dumb fake shorts of people, you know, pretending to get in car wrecks or pretending to get in fights. Like, and there's nothing wrong with acting and making entertainment, but really, if you've probably even seen this on YouTube Shorts, on Instagram Reels, what is actually thriving in content now? And this is what I hope coming into 2025 that we as photographers can unite against, with things like content credentials, with things like making, you know, better images. And I'm always at this point, if I'm in a group, willing to say, hey, here's the raw file. It's a real photo. If someone at this point, if someone's a photographer, I don't mean I give them the raw file. I show them like, here's the XIF, here's the raw file. At this point, I think, and tell me how you feel about this in a Facebook group. If you're in a landscape group, and I'm seeing this terrible in the landscape, world's greatest landscape photographs, and they used to be full of great photos from great photographers, now it's mostly just AI nonsense. And my feeling on this, until something like content credentials, until something, the social media networks are taking this seriously, is if something looks fake, it probably is. And it's perfectly legit to say, to leave that comment in that group and say, hey, raw file or it didn't happen. And if they don't respond, it's fake. You know, because in the past, photographers probably would have responded like, oh no, this is my art, I don't have to prove anything. Yes, you do. You do. And this is something that if I'm out on the streets or the landscapes, and you tell me how you feel about this theme in general, Jason, like, I'm always taking behind the scenes photos with my phone. I mean, videos usually of like, hey, here's where I am at, look at the scene. Sure, it's good for uploading to your story, but it also shows that you were actually in this place because absolutely nothing is believable anymore. Are you in agreement with that? Yes, no?
Well, actually, we'll go back to one of my pet peeves, and a lot of this is a personal thing. You know, you have to draw the line somewhere, but this is still photography in where people would change the sky, you know, sky replacement. That was really big for a long time. And I'm not a fan of that, but I can at least look at it and say they were present when they took the photo. Maybe they changed the sky. Okay, well, you can still call that art. You can still call it yours because you did those things. You know, not the sky replacement part, but you were present when you captured the image. And so there is something to be said about that. But I think that kind of started us down this path. And now we're looking at AI images that never had somebody behind the keyboard started typing some phrases in, and they get something amazing. And this photograph that I take that speaks to my own soul, and I love it, and it gets two likes, or it's a AI image of a bison with lightning behind it in the Grand Tetons, and it gets a million likes, and it's not real at all.
Yeah. So, and the thing, and I was never a fan. I was always kind of the hater of the sky replacement and all that stuff that these apps like Neo and stuff did, because I'm like, look, you're taking a photo of a sunset. Like, if you're taking a photo, I feel like when you're changing your primary subject to be something other than what it was, I think if you shot a wedding, right, you got a great photo of the wedding couple, but you had a sucky sky, I think a sky replacement there is a little different, because you're trying to make you're basically making a painting for that couple, right? When you say, look at the photo I took of a sunset in Yellowstone, let's say, right? But you pasted in that sky, you didn't take that photo of a sunset in Yellowstone. Now, I think where everyone draws the line of between digital art and not digital art is one thing. I think the key is always being honest about it. But I think AI has taken us to a completely different level. And now we see this in Facebook. You have the generative AI. And Facebook, I'm seeing ads from, not Facebook, Photoshop. I'm seeing ads from Adobe that are actually promoting the idea of ditch your photographer. You can just fake it now. And people are getting pissed about this because Adobe's really turning against its core base. I mean, there's a lot of things we could rail on Adobe about. And I think we talked about that in some of the recent episodes this summer. But I think ultimately what I'm getting at as we come into this and we talk about kind of our favorite gear of the year or of the past year is what to go out, what to inspire yourself with this year, is I just want to set this standard first of like, don't get too disheartened because only your mom and your wife and your friends are liking your photos. These social media apps have flat out turned against content creators. And unless you literally are whoring for them, for lack of a better word, and making the content, and it's even the same with reels and stuff. Most of these reels you see that are getting millions of views of like car accidents, right? Like, how have we sunk to the area where to get millions of views, you have to show violence, you have to show car accidents. And it's one thing to report news. Like, I'm not saying that journalism and reporting these things isn't important, but these videos aren't trying to report news. They'll take a car accident where people are getting hurt and put like, you know, music over it and act like it's a movie, right? Where you're supposed to be interested. It's not reporting news or telling you whether they survived or any of these things. It's not news. It's simply salacious content to appeal to us in a psychologically, I think psychologically destructive way. And this is what's being fed in front of us. Or it's, you know, people getting in a fight outside of a restaurant, but it's completely staged. Now, is there anything, and we could say, well, we've done this in movies for 100 years now where, you know, we make a story and it's completely staged. That's fine. But when you watch a movie, you know, it's a story. The whole context of stories now on these channels and stuff is not that we're creating a fictional scene. Both YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, the creators of these videos, they're intentionally trying to make you think that this is a real life event, because that's what gets rewarded on these platforms. Not that I made a short film, right? That's a completely different thing. There's nothing wrong with acting and quote fakery when you're not lying to people. So I just want to set the stage for 2025 and say, let's go out and create real content. I think with all this AI stuff, we're always obsessing of, you know, do we need to use AI? Do we need to fake it? Does their face have to be perfect? I think in the long run, and I've said this on the past few episodes here on the Pro Photo Podcast, I think this is going to have a return in time once people realize it. Because most of your mothers and your grandmothers and stuff are seeing, they think AI kid building a sandcastle the size of an aircraft carrier is real, right? A lot, and honestly, it's kind of shocking. Like, how do you possibly think this is real? Like, these photos of, like, a baby owl sitting on top of a brother owl, sitting on top of a mother owl, all flying through the sunset. And they're like, oh, creation is so great. That's so amazing. Be blessed. And I'm like, what is even going on with this stuff? Like, and so without going too deep down the rabbit hole, I just thought we'd bring this up to kind of set the stage for today, Jason, and say, you know what? Be encouraged. Take real photos. Real photos are going to come back. These real memories matter. I'm to the point now where I'm going back in archives, and I'm going back to archives of photos that are 15 years old. And it's like, wow, I remember that. And you see this, you know, maybe you have a street photography book in your living room or something like that. Have you ever picked up a street photography book or a history photography book? And you're looking at a lot of these iconic photos that are now iconic, but 60 years ago when they were taken, like if you actually stop and look at the photo, you're like, that photo isn't so amazing, right? I mean, it's not, I'm not trying to knock on the photographer because they were moments. That photographer recognized that moments were important. And a lot of times I take photos now and I have this same feeling like, oh, this is nothing. And then I stop and I'm like, you know what? 50 years from now, this could be in a book. It's nothing now because everyone knows it. But 50 years from now, they don't. It's the same with journalism. It's the same with street photography. Frankly, it's even the same with weddings and event photography and things like that. And to some extent, even our landscapes and our cityscapes, I mean, these things change and they become more important over time. And them being real, I think, is going to become more important over time.
Yeah, I agree. You know, years ago, I said that photography is important, and a lot of people lose that through all of the images that we see. I mean, we're inundated with them, thousands and thousands and thousands of photos a year right. that any one person is going to look at. And you got to go back to the part where it's real and that it's important. And I always, my mother passed away in 2013, and I remember trying to find images of her for the celebration service that we had. And when I was looking through those images, you know, it dawned on me just how important it is to have those images. And yeah. It's that way with nature photography. It's that way with weddings. It's that way with news. It's that way with everything, because this is our history. This is, and with AI is muddying things up a bit. And I don't like that at all.
And no, and I think
the people that are professional photographers that have been doing this for years, some of those have started embracing it, like the AI that Adobe has where you can put a camel in a desert scene. And I just don't understand why they're embracing it, other than when they do that, they get a ton of likes on Facebook.
Well, and hopefully that will end soon. I mean, we're seeing things like content credentials now in the new version of Lightroom. And, you know, we may not go too deep into news this week, but we have a new version of Lightroom. We have a new version of Capture One, which has seen improvements to its masking. We can now do better subject masking and stuff. It's still not at the level of Lightroom, but I'm glad to see we have that back and forth competition. And I think you're right on point, Jason, in terms of all this, these tools. You could say, well, first we had cloning, we had the spot healing brush, we had content aware fill in Photoshop, and okay, but I never approved of completely faking your image with those either. I think if your image was true to its source and to its subject, it was fine. But obviously, if you get into journalism or you get into pretending that you took a great landscape, when you know, I have a workshop called Cloning Magic, and a lot of everybody's using AI now, but I could, if we knew how to use the cloning tool, we could put anything. We could put the camel right into the photo still. And we've been doing this for years. It's just before, people seemed like they were a little more critical, like, oh, this is Photoshopped. And all of a sudden, all this AI stuff is out, and everybody's like, oh, that's amazing. How'd you do that?
Oh, that's okay, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, and I think the other ethical issue, aside from being transparent, is that this AI stuff is arguably essentially just plagiarizing other people's photography to create your own. And I've played with the AI. I mean, I think it's remarkable what it can do. And I think providing things are correctly licensed, you know, you look at something like generative AI, let's say you're an art director for an advertising company, like this is really useful. But when you see an ad on a billboard, you're not saying, oh, what an amazing landscape. I can't believe they captured that. Like, it's an ad, you know, it's probably all montaged and faked in, right? There's levels, right?
Right.
Thank you, Bob.
There's always lines that you can that you have to find.
And, but I think the lines have been crossed.
Absolutely, they have.
The lines are way crossed now. And when you're just defrauding people, and it's important to understand most of these pages creating this content they're spam pages. Like, have you never noticed they always have these really weird names? They're never anyone you've heard of.
Yeah, Arizona, lovely landscape place.
Right, and what they do, I've actually looked into this. Like, what's the point? But what they actually do a lot of times is they'll get a lot of followers and likes, and then they'll go back and change these posts. For example, once they're going viral, and put a link in them, for example. And so I've seen actually YouTube videos because I'm like, what do they gain? I know you can generate some revenue and stuff on Facebook for doing, if you get lots of views and stuff like that from your page. But what a lot of these people have started doing is they'll make posts and they'll use those to build a page, for example, and then sell it or use it for spamming. But sometimes they'll take these posts, they'll get them really big, and then they'll go back and actually edit those posts and put links to spam sites and things like that in them, or to phishing sites, things like that. Because let's be honest, most of the people that are responding to these really fake images, they're not the most internet savvy people. I mean, most of these, it's so obvious they're fake that you're sitting there pulling your hair out to all these people saying, oh, this is amazing. Which then what you do is you comment and you say, this is AI fakery, which then feeds the algorithm even more and rewards the page because you're leaving a comment and fighting with people.
Yeah, if it's negative, it doesn't matter. It's interaction. That's all that matters.
So let's come into this episode of talk about gear. What's new this year? What's in the news, right? We're seeing things like we have this Sony a7 9 and super low refresh rates on these sensors, like all this stuff that they're talking about on Petapixel and the YouTube videos. This drives YouTube too, talking about gear, not videos of us talking about technique. You need to be talking about the latest gear. And most of the videos you're seeing on YouTube are also, if not sponsored, they are patronized in some way. They take these big YouTubers on trips and all that kind of stuff. Right. Maybe we're just envious because they don't invite us to trips.
Well, I gotta be honest. I am a little bit envious that I don't get invited on trips.
And I'm not saying I'm not saying it's bad when you have guys like Northrop and Fronos Photo or the Micro Four Thirds nerd when they're as long as they're being honest about it, I think it's fine. Yeah. I like watching gear videos too, but I think it is important that, again, we understand like where people have coming from. I don't get invited to anything. I don't get sent free software. I know I'm not huge, but some of my reviews of things and comparison videos do get a lot of views. But as soon as they see my reviews and I'm basically tearing everybody apart, it's like the camera conspiracies guy. Like, he doesn't get invited or sent free stuff either because he's always hating on everyone. And my goal is not to hate on products. In fact, my recent view of Lightroom versus DxO 8 or Luminar Neo, I tore into these things because the image processing on them is mostly, that's what it comes down to. Not there's more AI features in Adobe. Obviously there is, but that's not what I really care about. I want real photos. It's that we have all these cameras and all these algorithms and all this stuff going on, and I need a tool that helps me create real photo quality so I can have my own artistic vision. And the same with you with landscapes. You want something, yes, you have your artistic vision, but you want something that's real.
Right. I want to have been there. I want to remember the location. It's not that my creative vision takes a hit. You know, if I take an image and my vision of that image differs from what I actually saw, I'm good with that because I was still there. I was still in the moment taking the photograph, and how I make it after the fact, well, that's on me to do it. But I have my own personal lines. Like we talked about, no sky replacements. I don't mind removing distractions, power lines or pieces of trash that are in the image.
Right.
It's okay. I'm not doing photojournalism, but I have my own creative vision that I'm going to produce what I produce based on that. But most of the time for me, it's pretty much what you see. Like, I'll bring in drama from the sky, but the sky was there. It existed.
Right. And so with that in mind, let's transition to the best tools to help us create quality, right? I mean, so we're coming in, you know, we have new cameras, we have old cameras. I'm going to take a little more old camera approach today, but I have new cameras, I have old cameras. And here's what I've started realizing with gear. So if you're putting together a Christmas list for yourself or for someone else, I'm just going to talk about it all the same. Maybe you're just coming into a new year. You're thinking, okay, what am I going to do with gear for 2025? What am I going to do with software? What am I going to do with lighting? This video right here that we're streaming, if you're watching on the YouTube version, not the audio version, I just picked up a Lumix G9. Now, this is a camera from 4 or 5 years ago now, right? This is a Micro Four Thirds camera. Over here, what I normally stream with is, I'm actually selling off some of my Sony full frame stuff because it's big. The body isn't so big. It's the lenses on this full frame stuff. It's these massive lenses. Now, I've been shooting for a few years now. When I do my portrait, wedding, fashion kind of work, I've had Fuji. I have a Fuji X-T3. I have a Fuji X100 that I've used pretty relentlessly for my street work. And I do just want to add the caveat that I bought this before it was like the trending Instagram camera that it's now. I mean, I think this thing, it might be still worth more than I paid for it, even though the Mark 6 is out with image stabilization and a 40 megapixel sensor. But this is a great camera. And it's one that this never sees a case. This is a camera. And that's why you see I have the Haug lens hood, which I think is linked in the comments on this thing. It's weather sealed once you get a filter and a lens hood on it. And you can see that it's getting a little beat up. If it would focus. I don't know if it'll focus that close. But
I'll trust you.
You can trust me on it. It's getting well used. But that's okay for a street camera. And I beat this thing. And it's made of metal. It's sturdy. It's hard. I have a Sony RX100, right? The 1-inch sensor. Great for video. Great all-rounder. But you know what I don't like about a camera? They're small and big, right? And then there's these cameras that feel sturdy in the hand. I don't really care if they're made of plastic or made of metal. It's how they're built. Right. Those little cameras like the RX100 series, they're a great camera, but they feel so delicate to me. And, you know, they're extending zoom lens and all this kind of stuff. Obviously, they have lesser low light performance than a larger sensor, but they're still a great camera. Really good 4K specs, all this kind of stuff. Although I have to say with Sony cameras, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just me. You said you switched to Sony a while ago. I started my career on Canon. I've used Sony for years. Then I went and kind of started buying Fuji stuff. Now I'm of the opinion that I'm not going to be loyal to any one brand because they're not loyal to us. And so I was actually thinking about buying another Fuji. And then they've had so many autofocus issues with their firmware updates this summer when Fuji normally has really good autofocus. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to go buy an X-H2. I'm going to pick up some Micro Four Thirds gear and see what that's all about. And so I actually am streaming right now on the G9, and then I have an Olympus OMD EM5 Mark II. This is a tiny camera. I mean, and this truly is tiny. The G9 is about the size of a normal Sony, right? An A7 III, something like that. The little Micro Four Thirds cameras are truly tiny. But here's the beauty of this, and this is what I love too. There's two main brands. You have Olympus and Panasonic making Micro Four Thirds. This is a great thing to look at if you're looking at a street camera, an all-rounder. I wanted more of an all-rounder because I need to do a lot more video this year. And I'm like, oh, this camera is only for street. This camera I use for portraits. Here's my landscape camera. And so obviously we can have our specialty cameras, but with the Olympus, I can have tiny. I can get really good photo. I can get really good video. This is something to think about in landscapes and why I think actually I'm going to get Jason to get a Micro Four Thirds this year. Not because I'm like the new Micro Four Thirds ambassador. I'm not selling my Fujis and jumping everything for Micro Four Thirds, but you have two brands and honestly some other brands like, you know, cinema cameras and stuff that use Micro Four Thirds mount. But the beauty is I buy a lens and I can have my little tiny all-rounder street camera. I can have my video camera over here that's also an all-rounder. And these lenses, Jason, are tiny. But you know what's blowing my mind? Because these sensors are small. The in-body image stabilization, and this is something that Sony is behind on. They have IBIS, but it's not great. This is something that Fuji is finally getting into with their newer bodies. That's pretty good. But Olympus and Panasonic, we're talking 5 stops. I can hand-hold 1-second exposures. Or longer. Sometimes it's 2. It depends on the length. I mean, it's mind-bogglingly good. No tripod. And so, first of all, for long landscapes, I know you do kind of these long telephoto kind of landscapes. Mm-hmm. And yes, you're probably on a tripod most of the time. I've always been a big tripod advocate. But the other thing is being able to do slower shutter speeds on things, let's say street, with moving people, moving cars, landscapes with trees blowing or grass blowing. I mean, imagine the ability to handhold half a second landscape so that you can just get, you know, the tips of the grass blowing in the wind. I mean, there's a lot of options. So I think what I'm getting at, and I'll let you talk about what gear you're using, what your favorite tools are for this year, and then we'll give us kind of some picks as we wrap up the show. What I'm getting at is no one camera is perfect. Full frame is great. It's slower noise, although I don't think noise really matters that much. I think it just gives character to our images in this AI world. But these smaller cameras then have their advantages of you can have a whole kit in a tiny bag. And you actually want, this is what I learned with the X100. If you don't have a camera in a bag, or if it's very small and you actually want to take it with you, this sits in the cup holder pretty much everywhere I go, which means I actually grab it and use it. Now, it's a fixed lens, 35 millimeter. I have the 50 millimeter adapter if I want to do some quick portraits or something for it. The point is I use it because it's accessible. You take the Micro Four Thirds. Recently, I've gotten into it. Same thing. I use it because it's small, it's versatile, but it's also different. That five stops of IBIS that lets me shoot handheld at 1 second gives creative choices that I don't have in my Sony. And to me, Sony's, and this might just be me, I do love dials and settings, and I love the old vintage style cameras like Fuji does. And you're a Nikon shooter, the Nikon ZF, I've been eyeing that too, because it does those dials and kind of goes that it's taken after the Nikon, the classic Nikon FM1, FM2 series. But Sony cameras kind of feel, I've heard Sony cameras described as soulless, and I thought that was kind of an half name because they're so good in every way, almost every way, and yet I don't feel anything when I pick them up, and I don't know if it's something wrong with me or if it's because I'm like, and this matters, I think. And this is something I want us to talk about in gear is like the camera that you want to use. What I'm getting at here is not we have to go buy a new camera every year. We have to buy the latest camera to be inspired. That's what camera makers want us to think. Sometimes the way I get inspired is go buy an old $50 vintage lens. So it gives me a new creative outlet and a new way to see. And this is what I'm getting at, and I'll come back to this after you, Jason, is that getting inspired, getting new gear, getting something new, fresh, and creative isn't about buying the newest camera. It might include buying a camera, maybe new, maybe not, but it isn't always. You throw out some of your thoughts on all this so I don't hog the show here, and tell me what you think.
Well, first of all, it's your show to hog, so that's okay. But I'll go all the way back to 2001 when I was finally at a point I was looking for a real camera, you know, quote-unquote real camera. And I picked up the Canon A2E, I think, at the time, and it was the one that I'd always wanted. And then right next to it was an F100 Nikon, and I picked it up. And just the feel alone, I went with Nikon.
Right.
And that's what I've stayed with almost the entire time. I did go to Sony for a couple of years because I wanted to switch to mirrorless. And at the time, Sony was all the rage for mirrorless. So I swapped to them. And to your point that it has no soul to it, I would completely agree. I think the Sonys make amazing cameras. I think that most manufacturers make incredible.
They really do.
But Sony was a top-notch camera. It never failed me on anything. It had great eye autofocus, all that stuff at the time. But when I picked it up, I just didn't have any feeling behind it. It was like a science experiment, you know, just nothing behind it all. And my hands are somewhat meaty. So right. I had some lenses that actually rubbed blisters on my finger from picking it up and use it. So why would I want to pick this camera up and use it? I work on tripod most of the time, but still, even with the images, when you'd get back to Lightroom, I could do anything I wanted to with them, but the initial starting image just didn't, it felt soulless.
Exactly.
You know, and so at that point I was like, well, if I don't enjoy picking the camera up, then I'm just going to go back to Nikon because it doesn't really matter to me. I just want a camera that feels good in the hands that makes me want to get out and take photos.
Right. And this isn't the same for everyone. For some people, this will be Sony. And when I switched to Sony from Canon, what was it, 2013, 2014, when I switched from Sony to Canon, because Sony was way ahead in mirrorless. I was like, I wanted to get away from DSLRs. I wanted to get the live viewfinders. That was the first, the A7R II was my first Sony. Okay. And I love that camera. And now we're what, A7R 5 or something like 80 megapixels.
Yeah, I mean, for the 5, I had the 4.
Yeah, and if you're doing large landscape prints or something like that, it's phenomenal camera. And I know a lot of video guys love Sony because they nail it with focus. They nail it with resolution. So this isn't a hate on Sony show. If Sony is your camera, use it. And I've taken a lot of my best photos of my career on Sony cameras. I find as I get further along and I'm really trying to hone myself. I got my master's from PPA in like 2018. I'm like, oh, I've made this milestone, right? Like I'm a good photographer. I'm a master photographer now, right? But what the other masters told me before I got there is once you get a master's, you realize that you're just getting started. And that's actually what it kind of did for me is like, okay, technically I achieved what a photographer is supposed to achieve from, if I want to get a certification, but it doesn't actually make me a photographer. It doesn't make me a better photographer just because
you're halfway there.
No, I enjoyed the process of getting there, and the challenge of getting there was what was good for me. And the more I started doing projects, not just for pay, but for videos, for products I'm making, like pictorialist actions or studies or, you know, subject studies, light studies, shadow studies, and really focusing on the artistry of photography, it's like I want a camera that inspires me. And that camera might be different a year from now than it is last year, just like it will be for you. But what are you using now? You have, let's talk about, if someone is coming in, they're looking to either get into a new camera or maybe upgrade their camera or just expand their system as we come into all these Black Friday deals and Christmas deals that I'm not sure that much better of a deal, but they might be. So someone comes to you right now and they're like, hey, I want to get a really good setup in 2025. What do you recommend?
Yeah, I actually had that happen two nights ago at a hockey game. Somebody came up and said, hey, my son's really wanting to get into photography. He's been looking at the Canon stuff and the Canon R5. And I was like, well, I don't know much about Canon, but I know enough that the R5 is a fantastic camera. And if you look, there's an R5 II.
Right.
Which is also going to be a fantastic camera, but you're not going to go wrong with the R5 or the R6 or the R6 II or anything pretty much that Canon makes if you like the camera. If you take it and you hold it and, you know, you squeeze it, you call it George, I think it was in the cartoons. If you love it, then you're going to shoot with it. And most modern cameras, 99% of all cameras are better than 99% of all photographers. So
they are.
Yeah, they're phenomenal. So what I told them to do is look at KEH, you know, the used camera company, and you could go there and you can find some used stuff and you can get some good deals. And right now you can even get new R5s that are significantly less expensive than the R5 II, and they're still new in a box from places like B&H. So.
And we'll put some links to this stuff as well. But I mean, if we look here, I mean, what's an R5? What's an R5 II going for right now?
You know, $4,300, I think it is.
And you can get an R5 for under $3,000.
Yeah.
And the truth is, here's the thing. Let's talk about this full frame versus not full frame. I have full frame. I have 4x5 film. Here, how about this? Speaking of, I'm always getting a new camera, not only for videos, but to keep me inspired. But a lot of times that new camera is not a new camera at all. For example, I have this Hasselblad 500C. And it sat on the shelf. I got this from my late mentor, Ken Whitmire. It's in beautiful shape. It has sentimental value for me, but it's just a gorgeous camera. I've never shot it a lot, especially these days. Film is through the roof. I still shoot a lot of film because I like it. And I'm always buying rolls of film to do tests for the Filmist presets, because using film-like color grading as your baseline really does give you kind of a subtle nuance, and it gets you away from this overdriving sliders. Like film is such a good baseline. And I usually start with a film look now. And in the early days, I thought it was kind of a gimmick. And a lot of them are, because they look nothing like the film. But you really can't go wrong with a Velvia look or a Portra 400 look on your photos as a starting point. But I actually bought this Nonsback, which is an Instax square back for Hasselblad. And this is breathing new life into the Hasselblad. So if you have, and there's companies that make these for various medium format. I mean, medium format film is so expensive now. And then by the time you process and develop it, I have some. I have a roll of, I think, Portra 160 in the Hasselblad back there. Mostly when I shoot film now, it is a 35, because even that is $25 a roll plus developing, plus scanning. I mean, it's high. But have you ever shot Instax? I don't know if your family or, you know, these are really trendy. Fuji's market share is actually huge because of Instax, which tells you something, I think. We got cell phones that will take five times clearer of a photo than a Polaroid, right?
Right.
And people are going and spending $1, $2 a photo for Polaroid 600 for Fuji Instax. And if you go do it, I guarantee, I'm telling you, Jason, go out, get an instant camera of some time and take this on your landscapes. The dynamic range is terrible. The shadows are terrible. And it's absolute magic to watch that thing develop.
I don't know. So
he's doubting me here, but
I may be on the other side here. So okay, I started with black and white film. I started with the dark room and dealing with all the chemicals and the hours and hours and hours to produce a single image that you kind of might like, that doesn't have the dynamic range that you want. That's always missing something. And I cut my teeth in film, and then I went to slide film, and I really learned the craft of photography using slide film, because if you're off by a third, then your image is wasted, and that's wasted money and wasted time and all of that stuff. So you learn quick. But the second that I took a digital image, and this actually went more so when I switched to mirrorless, but the second I took a picture and I saw the image on the back, and I said, oh, I'm underexposed by a third. Let me fix that. That was it. I was done with film, and I haven't touched it since. If I never go back in a dark room, then it'll
I felt that way for years, and then eventually I got back into film. And I want to be clear, I don't shoot a lot of film. And usually if I'm shooting film, I'm shooting it side by side. I'll take this out with that Hasselblad Instax or with a roll. I mean, here is an OM2 and this camera. In fact, okay, let's just compare here since we're talking about gear. And what I'm getting at here is that your new gear this year might be an old film camera from eBay that will absolutely inspire your photography. I'm not saying, I realize I don't actually advocate for give up digital and shoot all film. But there's a grounding that shooting even a pack of Instax gives you that makes you more self-aware when you're shooting digital. And if you don't want to deal with developing film and stuff like that, that's why I kind of love, I have a Polaroid SX70, the classic SX70 camera, and I have the Instax back on the Hasselblad. And it's not like I'm going out shooting my weddings and my sessions, but I'll take some photos of those and everyone loves them. Like, you will get more response out of an Instax photo that comes out of the camera and you're like, look, then from your family and friends and people around you, then you will a $10,000, setup from Nikon or from Sony. And I know it's almost frustrating, but I think it speaks to what we talked about with the AI. Everybody is kind of worn out of everything being perfect. And I think the imperfection, and this is why even in landscapes and stuff, I've started doing pictorialist kind of inspired things and videos on the channel. But here's two cameras right here, right? On the top, we have the, come on, there it goes. We have an OM2. And on the bottom, we have its inspired sibling, which is an EM5 Mark III Micro Four Thirds camera. And frankly, they're about the same size. This was one of the smallest 35 millimeter SLRs ever made. And this was in the 80s, this was like the camera to own because it was tiny for a 35. It's full frame, man. It's full frame.
Right.
So what I'm getting at here is you could go buy either one of these. For the price of an R5, you could go buy this. You could go buy this. And you could probably go buy this. Right. And I am actually an advocate for, I'm going out to shoot today. What do I feel like? And I touch, I'll have six cameras sitting back here. They're not all the newest. The newest camera I think I have is my X100 5. And I have bought I don't know how many cameras I bought this year, but I haven't spent that much money on cameras. The most expensive camera I bought was actually this OM, which if you go on Amazon now and look at it, it sells for like $1,500. But I paid like $600 for this on eBay, and it's imported from Japan in flawless condition. I think it has like 6,000 frames on it or something like that. So that's another thing that I want people to think about, and kind of what inspired me to do the buyer's guide this time around is I've always been like, I'm a pro, I buy new gear because I'm going to get new good quality gear and put it to work. And yes, maybe if you're buying your main lens for a wedding or something like that, and it's your workhorse, go buy new. But even with like the R5, right? You don't have to buy the new one. There's so many of these cameras now. And this is what I really realized in the past few months as I started looking into like, you know, Micro Four Thirds gear and realizing, hey, a lot of my cameras aren't that new anymore and they still work great. We've had these cutoff points. Like, you remember the 5D Mark II generation when the sensors really right. got way better. And even then, compared to now, that sensor isn't great. But I actually still have my 5D Mark II converted to infrared back here. And I've printed 40, 50 inch prints from that 5D Mark II. And it's, what was it, a 21 megapixel sensor. Didn't handle long exposures quite as well because I was doing two hour long exposures. Some of the artifacts that sensor produced was, you know, I mean, I always push everything to its limit, right? How much dynamic range can I get out of a piece of Instax film? But what I'm getting at here, mirrorless came into its place. Nikon and Canon took a long time to get there, and they're still playing catch up, frankly. Because companies like Sony came in with full frame, companies like Fuji came in with crop sensor, companies like Olympus came in with Micro Four Thirds, all of them being mirrorless. Here's one here. Here's a Pen EPL3, another Micro Four Thirds camera. I have a little bit of a Micro Four Thirds vice the past couple months. This camera though, I think is from 2012. Now, this is not a camera I would take and go out and do weddings. Yes, on this, the dynamic range is less. The noise is more. It's not super fast, but it's a gorgeous little camera, and it costs like $150 in perfect condition. So what I'm getting at is we, as photographers, and especially because we're inundated with YouTube videos always talking about the new gear, I've actually kind of become a fan of YouTube videos talking about 10-year-old gear and how people are using it. Because using old gear kind of makes you think differently. Why would I take an old Olympus Pen 3 when I have an RX 100 Mark 5? I mean, yes, it's a little bit smaller, but that really doesn't matter. It's not. We're not right. talking about that much today. I have no idea. Because when you want to understand light and shadow, you don't need everything handed to you.
No.
You need to work for it. And when you take a camera that actually you maybe don't use intuitively, that maybe isn't quite as automatic in the sense of it does everything perfectly, that you actually have to think about, I'm not saying this is my main camera now. I'm saying, hey, I'm going to go take a walk, do some street photography with the old Olympus. The photos are still gorgeous out of it. I can print from these. Like, because ultimately, you know, if it's night out, am I going to go do night street photography? No, it's noisy. But if I put, I have on the Lumix right now, so I can't show you, I have a 15mm 1.7 Leica, which is a 30mm equivalent on Micro Four Thirds because it has a 2x crop factor. It's a phenomenal street lens. It's Leica sharp. And I know the Leica people will be like, that's not a real Leica. That's a Panasonic branded Leica. All the Leica lenses in Panasonic are superb lenses. That lens, I bought it on eBay used for like $300. Right? How much do you pay for a full frame, not a kit lens, but the premium end of the range, ultra fast lens on Sony, on Nikon, on Canon?
It's a lot of money.
Do you know how refreshing it is, Jason, to go out and be like, you know, I want something to freshen me up and do something a little creative, maybe a different focal length, and you don't have to spend thousands of dollars? Now, don't get me wrong, you can get full frame lenses. You can go buy vintage lenses. Right now, what I have a vintage Minolta Rocker 50mm. But these are different. It's a different style of shooting. It's manual, things like that. They're very aesthetic and they give you a great look. But this lens I have on the Micro Four Thirds, this is a modern, fast autofocus, you know, continuous video focus, all that kind of stuff lens. I can pop this on any one of these three Micro Four Thirds cameras. It's the same with the Fuji lens. Look at the size of a 30mm f2. I have videos on the channel about these little Fuji primes. A lot of times for people, you talked about the guy whose son won. I wanted to get into photography. And so us nerdy hardcore photographers like, oh yeah, this full frame camera is the best. I mean, you see Petapixel now, and I love Petapixel stuff, but everyone's talking about the revolutionary A9 III. Well, because it has, what's the global shutter?
Global shutter, yeah.
And more or less, this basically means the whole sensor is capturing instantly, right?
Right.
Versus scanning lines really fast. So there's no rolling shutter for video. What does this thing cost, though? I mean, that's so the A7, A9 III, just the body, $6,000.
That's right.
You can buy all the gear I've talked about today for $6,000. And so what I'm getting at, and why this gear episode's a little bit different, buy the camera that works for you. But it doesn't have to be new. 99.9% of the photographers that we know cannot utilize the, you know, it's like, oh, I need the global shutter from the A7 III. Why? Are you the top 1% of professional F1 car or NFL photographers that need that level? Like, it, you could hand me, everybody's always like, this does 60 frames a second. Do you know that I don't know about you, Jason, but I almost never use burst. I just, I'm included even when I'm doing portraits, when I'm doing street, sometimes if I use burst, I'm like, what's the slowest burst mode? Like 3 frames per second. I don't want 60 frames to sort through in Lightroom of a guy eating a hot dog. Like, I just don't.
So on the other side, I have the Nikon Z9, which is their flagship.
Right.
And the camera is amazing. It's big and it's heavy, but it's amazing. And I shoot hockey sometimes. And hockey, you have to have fast lens, and having that 20 frames a second full raw,
sure,
with, you know, autofocus that can, it'll actually grab the eye inside a helmet of an individual on the ice, and it's unbelievable. But that is the only time that I use that 20 frames a second, unless I get lucky enough for some wildlife. Now, if it's right, a bear, or if it's something that's moving, then yes, I'll take that 20 frames a second. But 90% of the time, one frame ever so often is just fine. You know, you just don't need, for most people, unless
honestly,
you're
doing, it's just a distraction for most. It just puts it you in the spray and pray mode. And I'm not knocking somebody that says, hey, I shoot sports, I need fast.
That's great.
Yeah. Everybody always thinks in my videos, I do reviews of Lightroom versus Capture One, and people want to fight. And I'm like, bro, like, you love Capture One. But like, Fuji users are always obsessed with Capture One. I've been testing this literally for years now, trying to find the difference. And it may have been true at one time. Oh, well, Fuji has an X-Trend sensor. You have to use Capture One to get it. It's total BS. Honestly, the noise reduction is better in Lightroom by a lot, especially if you include their AI noise reduction, than Capture One. But what I always say is, dude, I don't care. If you love Capture One, use it. Don't get mad at me, because when I'm in reviewer mode, I'm trying to be objective. I'm like, A image, B image, is one better? I can't find any difference. It's not better, or it is better, or this is better, right? And objectively speaking, I hate to say it, because I'm pissed at Adobe these days too. Objectively speaking, Lightroom, for almost everything a photographer does, is better than Capture One. It's better than On One. It's better than DxO. And I don't just say it, I demonstrate in that in the side-by-side reviews here. That doesn't mean it's better for you, because again, it's like a camera. Right. Use what works. So if you're getting into your, what do you, coming back to the original topic, what's the best gear for this year? I want to do portraits. I want to do weddings. Well, you know what? Get an X-T3. Get the last generation Nikon. Get the new Nikon. If money's no object, get the new one and the best lenses. But a lot of people to this topic of coming like, what? My son wants to get into photography. And it's like, oh, well, I have the Nikon Z9, or I have the Sony A9. I have the Canon R1. All these are great cameras. But another thing is, I feel like a lot of photographers that don't need a camera will get overloaded by it. I can't tell you how many people have bought the coolest, newest camera because their pro friends told them to get it. Yeah. And maybe you're buying a camera for someone, and what they should have bought them was a little X-T3 with a small little lens on it, so they actually take it with them. How many family members do you have that at one point bought whatever the latest mid-level camera was with a great big lens, and it just sits in the closet because no one wants to pack it around, right? But if you get a Fuji X100, you're going to shoot it because it looks good. It feels good. You look better you will look cooler with this around your neck. Like when you look like a tourist. That's okay though. Especially in Mexico. I'm in a country that I wasn't born in. I love looking like a tourist because people kind of like leave you alone. They're not going to be suspicious of you. Oh, he's just a tourist taking photos, right? That's how I want, if I'm doing street photography, that's how I want people to see me. Now I remember starting out in photography and I'm like, I want the biggest lens with the biggest lens hood so I can look so incredibly awesome.
That's right.
And I'm like, so the opposite of that now. But, you know, oh, I want a cool camera that does everything. My son wants to do video. He wants to do photo. He wants to do portraits of his friends. Okay, get a Micro Four Thirds with, you know, a 12 to 60 Leica, right? The Lumix that I'm filming myself on right now, 4K 30, 4K 60, 60 frames a second burst. I have no need for that. You can take this little Lumix camera that literally sells for $500. Oh, it's only 20 megapixels. Okay. Are you printing more than 40 inches? Right? This will, oh, I'm doing sports. Great. You're going to love that the 100 to 400 lens on this will fit in the palm of your hand instead of being the size of Jason's head and Gavin's head put together. Right? I mean, like, and so I'm not here to knock anyone's gear. I'm saying go out, get new gear, get used gear. Don't support kind of this whole rush of like, you have to go buy the newest, coolest thing that's on sale for Black Friday because tomorrow it's not going to be there. It's going to be there tomorrow and the price is only going to drop. Let's just stop falling for the fakery, whether it's AI or whether it's camera branding. Most of these camera companies are not giving very new things. Sony is making a huge deal out of this sensor in the A9II. It's a global shutter sensor. All the reviewers are saying it's game changing. It's revolutionary. Technologically speaking, it's a big deal. But in terms of actually making your photos better, it's almost a zero deal for almost every photographer in the world. Like it literally will almost do nothing in from what I've seen. And you can throw hate into the comments or over on the show notes at simfx.com/podcast or send me an email, profotoshow@gmail.com. You can even hate on Jason if you're bored of me. Like, yeah. Because he had the audacity to be here with me and listen to this tripe that I'm spewing. But these won't make your photos great. I know this is the weirdest gear annual gear show of all time. This is a Godox TT350, right? This little flash. It's not one of the big flagship flashes. But you know what? I bought a Profoto B1 years ago. I went to one of the national conferences and they had the speakers saying how great it was. Oh, don't get me wrong, it's a good light, but I spent thousands of dollars on that light. I don't think I ever used that on a paid session. I feel it's the dumbest piece of gear I've ever bought.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say if you love Profoto gear that you shouldn't buy it, right? If that's your thing and it works for you, that's okay. I'm not saying that the product is bad. It doesn't fit a normal Dolan's mount. The light modifiers have to be all their specialty proprietary. I'm so sick of anything proprietary, anything like this flash is like $60. Now, if you have Nikon, what's your pro level flash on your Nikon?
Nikon actually doesn't make them anymore.
Because there's so much competition for Chinese.
That's right. So, you know, it's Godox. Use Godox. I have a Godox 200 Pro, and
I had one of those too.
It's an amazing flash, you know, and you can build them up and make more. You can get modifiers, and they use the Bowens mount.
Yeah, if you use the Bowens mount, it's like I only want to buy flawless things that are standardized now.
That's right, it's flawless,
and it just works. And
yeah,
it may not. Is it build quality as good as a Profoto? No, but you know what, Profoto, stop wasting my time with your stupid proprietary mount. I'm not interested.
You can buy 8 of them for what you'd spend
literally
on Pro. So if it's a...
Yeah, I have an 8200. I have an 8600 for if I need to do something a little heavier duty. And even those, I mean, they're not cheap lights. An 8600 is, I think, $1,000 or something like that, US. But then you can get the last model that's used. But this TT350, and I'll get those lights out for big stuff. But the truth is, I can take this, one of these, or two of these, right? I can trigger it from I have a wireless trigger. That's radio. And with Godox, you can buy the wireless triggers and you can have one for your Fuji and one for your Sony and one for your Micro Four Thirds and one for your Nikon. And then ultimately, you can use the same lights, right?
Yeah.
So it's the same system. You just grab a different trigger if you want TTL, although normally I don't even care. If I put this, which I think is Fuji base, but if I stick it on the Olympus, it still fires. It still works fine. It's just not going to be TTL, right? I've taken more photos with this and other small lights, even a flashlight. I can take this, get it off camera over here, bounce it. We're always so obsessed with gear. And I think my main theme of this year's gear show is just try some stuff. Don't buy necessarily the cheapest thing, but don't be afraid to buy some used stuff. Don't think you need the biggest thing, because oftentimes it's the smallest thing that you're actually going to use the most. These big fancy sensors and super fast readout rates and all this stuff, they don't make your photos great. In fact, single shot mode on a camera that may not be perfect with an older lens that maybe you even manual focus is probably going to make you a better photographer than the latest A9 III or Nikon Z9. And then you're going to know when you need the Z9, you know. And so these are great cameras, and you can still, I think, buy the 580EX, I don't know what version it's at now, for your Canon flash, right? But now you're stuck to that brand. I would much rather buy a universal brand. And I think that's where these camera companies, a lot of them really miss it. Like, we're to the point in history where you spend $100,000 on a BMW and then they want to charge you $10 a month to have your heated seats turned on. Like, we're getting sick of this crap. It's anti-consumer, and I'm sick of not being able to repair things. Like, we have the right to repair. We have the right to use our stuff. We have the right to not pay every month to use something we already paid for. These companies think they're the government and they can just keep taxing us because they have a gun to our head. But there's options out there. And that's the beautiful thing about competition that we don't have with government, is like, we can go to another brand. This is why I recommend to everybody that you have at least two camera brands. And maybe one's your big mainstay and the other is the little Micro Four Thirds system that Jason's going to pick up this year, for when he wants to go on a family trip, but still have some reach with his Leica 100 to 400.
I got to tell you, the lady that co-leads the workshops with me, like the ones we're going to Joshua Tree National Park next year, she swapped everything from, she was a Nikon shooter, went to Sony, and then swapped everything for the OM system. And she absolutely loves it. And she said, it's light, it's easy to use, you take it with you. You know, you can carry multiple lenses and you can do hikes and it doesn't weigh you down. Because I've got, you know, the Z9, I've got a 14 to 24 2.8, a 24 to 120 F4. I have the 7200 2.8, but that's just for hockey. And then the other one that goes in my bag is the 100 to 400, 4.5 to 5.6. That is a very heavy bag.
Yeah.
So when I'm looking, I'm like, oh, I got to hike. I don't want to go hike. I don't want to carry all this stuff, but of course I love my camera. I love my lenses and all that stuff. And I'll go on those hikes when I go out and those locations, but I don't ever go very far.
No. And I remember doing stuff, some of my stuff for the Expose workshop, the Photo Perfect workshop. I remember hiking with my brother into places like the subway in Zion. That must have been a 10-mile round trip hike. And we had we probably had 60, 70 pounds of gear. And I was just thinking about this the other night. Like, I could have put, now I realized that particularly the video technology wasn't there then. But with this, with a sling pack, I could film and photograph the same things just as well as I did with that 60 pounds of gear. And I think we're so obsessed with having the biggest and the best. And now that I've kind of gotten a little bit outside of that mindset, I'm like, a camera does need to inspire me. I need to want to pick it up and use it. But if I hold it in my hand and it feels good and I want to shoot with it, I mean, you've got screens, you can do video. If somebody goes out and buys an Olympus EM5 Mark III, and honestly, Olympus is newer stuff because they've had some kind of crazy stuff going on as a company and they've been rebranded a bit. And there's been a lot of like scandals going on with Olympus. I'd rather have their older one. Their newer ones are kind of lackluster in terms of how much more you're getting for the money. You can buy the last generation or the generation before it camera literally for like a third of the cost. Yeah. And this is true of full frame. Like, maybe you want a Nikon or something like that. The downside that Nikon and Canon have is they took so long to really get their mirrorless stuff sorted out. So now you have Sony cameras. You can go buy an A7 R2 that's not that valuable anymore. And it's like, oh, should I get the A7 R2 or the A7 R5? It's again one of those things where it's literally going to make no difference for almost anyone, right? I have the A7 R2 was 40 megapixels. I could do absolutely glorious prints from that camera. But the truth is, as pros, as people that have experience, you could give either me or Jason the slowest camera you have and take us to whatever situation, and we'd make it work. Because it's really not about your camera.
It's not, you know, and when I switch back from Sony, because Sony was great with the autofocus and the eye tracking and all of that crazy stuff. And I swapped to the Z6II, and by all reports, if you looked at the internet at all, they said the Z6II was a horrible autofocus. It didn't work. It was, right. It didn't track the eye and all that. And I took it and I treated it like a DSLR, and it was flawless. So,
well, and we're so obsessed with, like, does it have face detect? Does the eye move when I run across at the fastest I can? I mean, this is how YouTubers test. So we're kind of conditioned.
We are.
And admittedly, when they release these new cameras and say, hey, this is the new feature, it's fair for us to test it. I'm not saying the YouTubers shouldn't test it, right? But when you take these things and you're like, well, this is the G9 versus the G9 II versus the Z9 versus the one versus the Fuji versus the Olympus. And I'm like, you do realize that just 10 years ago, when I shot, you've seen my exposed workshop because I have a commentary for it, for a review from you on my site. When I shot that was the early days, and I even had a cinema camera, I think, for some of that. I think I had a C100 cinema camera from Canon. It was all manual focus. Like, video up until 5 years ago, and most video in Hollywood still is using manual focus. So we're like all obsessing over, like, first of all, and if we're talking about old versus new cameras, when we talk about how great is the autofocus, mostly with these new autofocus features effects are video, because video is a harder animal to conquer in terms of staying on. You've probably seen, you know, maybe it drifts a little here and there. Is the Sony a little better? Yeah. Sony's legendary with their autofocus. If that's all you care about, then you probably want a Sony, right?
Sony.
If that's what's going to inspire you, is that you have the confidence to know that you're always going to be in focus. But I haven't noticed this focusing poorly. And on stills, they focus phenomenally. And yet, we always say the focus is so good now. 10 years ago, we were manual focused.
No. Like,
so we're getting obsessed by the consumerism that we're being sold. So I think to wrap up, let's throw out a couple favorite picks of what we would recommend people go buy right now. Let's throw out a new pick and an old pick. And if I was going to throw out a new pick for the camera that I would go buy right now, it would probably be a Fuji X-T5. Now, I actually have the X-T3, but the X-T5 has in-body image stabilization. It's 40 megapixels. There's nothing you can't do with that camera for under $2,000. And, you know, so, like, here's a lot of times what people don't think when they want to be cool full-frame nerds. Like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get the best full-frame camera. What's going to happen is you're going to have worse lenses, which are far more important than your body. I see this a lot. I actually am in charge of a large cafe down here in central Mexico. I'm in charge of the marketing, the branding. Mexico doesn't know cafe like Europeans do, in terms of, it's not in the culture quite as much. So things like espresso and lattes and stuff, the quality standards are a lot lower. And so I come into this cafe, and my job is to make sure we're up to European level standards in this cafe. I do the marketing, I do the presentation, the atmosphere of the place. So it's kind of a European feeling cafe. What I'm getting at, to make a contrast, you don't know how many cafes I've walked into down here. I know you do this, this happens in the States, but even more here, where, you know, they oh, we're going to open a cafe. It's the cool new thing to do. They have this glorious machine sitting there, right, where they spent $15,000 on a machine. In it's going to take them years and years. They're going to be out of business, most of them, before they ever recoup this money, right? And I see photographers. The reason I make this comparison is because I see photographers doing this all the time. I walk into this cafe. I'm like, wow, that's a great machine. It's better than the machines I have in my locations. And then I look over to the corner, and I see a coffee grinder that cost $400. And I'm like, oh, this is not going to be good coffee. Because that machine doesn't matter. That machine is meant to look pretty and make you look like you're a coffee shop on the corner in France, right? It makes you look really cool, imported from Italy, the works. But the grind isn't good. The grinder is the lens to our cameras, right? And I don't know if you're into coffee, but if you're into, like, espresso, if your grind isn't good, everything else falls apart. So if I'm saying, okay, what are we going to get for this coffee shop? I'm saying we're going to spend twice as much on the grinder as the old machine we buy. Because as long as the old machine works, it's going to be fine. It's getting a good, consistent grind every time for our employees that's going to matter. And it's the same with a camera. And I see this all the time. And I see this especially with photographers down here because it's trendy to have a full frame. And I know it's been trendy for years, but now that's the trend for Mexico photographers because it kind of flows down, right, in these different cultures. Spend all this money on a full frame, but then you got to have one lens, right? Or buy a used X-T3 instead of a Nikon Z9. No offense, Jason. How much money do you have left? You literally have enough money left over for tacos and a full suite of good glass, primes, couple of zooms that are good for video. I mean, it's truly amazing when you start actually comparing the numbers, and I think most people don't do this. So what I would say is, if you want something new, get a Sony ZF if you want full frame, maybe. That's not a super expensive camera, but it's got those dials, and it, you know, feels great in the hand. That one I'm actually eyeing for myself. Get a Sony.
Nikon ZF, yeah.
See, I'm sorry, Nikon. We're too many brands here.
That's right.
And again, I haven't shot with a Nikon ZF. I don't know if I love it, but I want to try it. Sony, I have an A7 III. Get an A7 III. Get an A7 IV. I think we're at A7 V now. Yeah. These are great all-rounder cameras. If you want full frame, that's fine. Do that. But you're going to pay more for those lenses. That said, you can get some old used lenses. You can pick up some vintage 35mm glass with adapters. If you need full frame for something, use it. If you don't, look at a Fuji. And if you don't need new, go to eBay. Go to your local, what is it, KEH that sells all the used stuff.
KEH, yep.
They're always sponsoring all the videos and they don't give me a dime. But, you know, you could.
Me either.
But you could get these used. You can get a used X-T3. Fuji's a little trendy. This is why I wanted to actually get another brand, because Fuji's getting a little Apple-esque for me in terms of, like, we're so cool, we're out of stock, because it's been a trendy brand for a few years. After I've noticed that I get into a brand and then it gets trendy a few years later. So maybe I should be getting a little dead of the cut here, guys. But so what did I do? Instead of buying a new Fuji, I said, you know what? I'm going to go pick up I've bought a couple of Micro Four Thirds cameras. And like three lenses for less than buying a Canon R5, for less, about the same price as buying an X-H2, right? And now I have all these different things to experiment with. Now that may stress some of you out, like, oh, I don't want three cameras to manage. That's fine. I'm not saying do that, but I am saying that having kind of two sides to your kit matters. So what I would say is, you're coming into 2025, look at some used gear, look at some used lenses that are still current. Because you're going to pay half the price for these. And what it's going to allow you to do is try different things. If you're full frame right now, go buy a Fuji or a Micro Four Thirds, an Olympus, a Lumix, something like that, something small that you want to use on the street. If you're already on a small camera, maybe look at a Nikon ZF so you can get a kind of a classic full frame feel. That might inspire you in a different way. Or maybe last generation Nikon, the last generation Canon used on eBay. And get maybe a good prime, a good 1.4 prime for it. Don't feel like you have to spend. I mean, the prices of these new Nikon, Sony, Canon lenses
are
outrageous.
And so the
fact that you can literally go, I have a 24 to 105 f/4, so it's not even the 2 on my Sony, but it's a legendarily sharp lens. It's really good quality. Those sell for what, $1,000, $1,200, and that's the cheap lens on a full frame.
Right, that's the cheap one.
The 12 to 60 on a Micro Four Thirds is an incredibly versatile lens. It stabilized. So now you're combining lens stabilization with in-body and stabilization. It fits in the palm of your hand. It's half the size. And it's a 2.8 to f/4. You can literally buy the thing for $500. And it's like a glass, right? This is not their cheap kit lens. I mean, they do sell it as a kit, but this is notoriously a fast focusing. It's sharp. It's got low chromatic aberration. Like, it's got everything. And the same with Fuji. You can pick up a Fuji with that legendary, I think it's the 18 to 55 zoom. You can buy that for like $350. So you can buy an old X-T3 for $500 or $600 with an 18 to 55, and you now have your new camera. And here's what I want to say in this. I know I'm kind of going on about getting old stuff. What I've learned is that the inspiration we get from buying a brand new camera that costs a lot is not actually more than saying, oh, I've been watching videos. That old camera from 10 years ago really catches my eye. That kind of burst of inspiration of like, I want to go out and shoot. It's the same whether you bought an old camera or whether you bought the brand new one. So my picks are, that's kind of my general picks, is X-T5, X-T3, Sony A7 III used. Nothing wrong. If you got the money and you want to go for the new one, get the latest version. That's fine. but don't get too hung up on it. Get good older lenses that are sharp, not the latest and greatest f/2.8 glass. If you have to use an adapter, that's okay. Oh, it's the autofocus is slower. It's really not going to make that much difference.
It's not that much slower. Right?
No. In fact, most of my Sony time, I use my Canon EF lenses on because it's what I had. They were great lenses. I had my Canon 70-200, 17-40. I still have my Canon 24mm tilt shift back there, one of the sharpest lenses I've ever used. That's all manual focus anyway. I can adapt those to my Fuji, to my Micro Four Thirds. You've got to keep crop adapters in mind. I can adapt them to my Sony. They just work. Yeah. And then with the extra money you have left over, instead of going and buying some really expensive lighting setup, get a few umbrellas, maybe a little light stand, maybe a little softbox. Yeah. Get a Godox or a newer light, and maybe you don't want to be big. Don't think you need to buy an 8600, right? You hand me one of these with a remote trigger and say, I need a portrait in any situation, unless it's like, oh, you got a family of 12 in the blazing sun, right? I mean, like there's times when you need to go big. But what you can do with a little light like this by bouncing it off a white wall to turn that wall into a softbox, if you know how to use light, if you understand shadow, it'll blow people away. What are your favorite? What are your favorite gear picks for the year? What's inspiring you lately? Obviously, you use the Z9. We'll put that on the list. But what do you think people should go buy this year coming into 2025?
So, you know, part of it is mirrorless isn't that old. The fact that you can't adapt the old lenses, that means you can open up hundreds of possible cheaper lenses.
Right.
But as far as cameras on the Nikon side, they just came out with a Z6 III, and it's $2,300 right now, which it's a lot of money, but it's still reasonable. But you can go and find a Z6 II. You can find those for really cheap on places like KEH or look for somebody that's selling one. I mean, I sold mine. It was like $1,000. So you've got a Z6 II that's going to be amazing for $1,000. And then you can find some old F-mount glass and a little adapter and you're set as far as the cheaper stuff. If you can afford it, the Z8 is amazing. I would have gone for the Z8 at the time that I bought the Z9 if it had been out, but it wasn't out yet.
Right.
So when I bought the Z9, that was all that they had that was the top of the line like that.
And the Z8 runs for something like...
It's like $4,500, I think, which is really pricey, but it's pretty much a Z9.
It's like $3,500, yeah.
$3,500, that's great. I mean, it's a Z9 and a smaller body with less battery. That's the only difference.
Jason's thinking premium, and I'm thinking like a poor person.
Yeah, yeah. It's difficult because I've always been the one that chases the dragon, you know. I started in 2001. It was always an upgrade to the next camera, upgrade to the next lens.
Right.
And it was just a cycle. And once you get to a certain point, you know, I wanted the Z9 because it was our flagship and I got it. It's heavy and it's a fantastic camera. But if I could have gotten the Z8, I would have.
Right.
But yeah, I typically think newer and I always have. But there's something to be said for those older cameras. And what it comes down to is shoot what you love to shoot. If it's an old film camera, then great. You're going to save yourself a lot of money. If it's
well, not on film,
great. Yeah.
My challenge for everybody is go buy something this year. Like I try to get something new in my kit. Well, maybe it's upgrading my phone even because I'm doing videos on it. Maybe it's upgrading my computer. Maybe it's a new camera. Not going crazy, but like trying to keep kind of growing every year. What I would say, go out and get something that's kind of the opposite of what you have now, but not over the top.
Right.
And so for Jason, I would say, go get something small. Go find a Fuji. Right. Go find a Micro Four Thirds. And Jason does long focal lengths and stuff like that. I wouldn't be surprised if Jason comes back in the year and he sold all his Nikon gear for a Micro Four Thirds camera. Because for that, it's so, the quality. The other thing with these, it's the format. A Micro Four Thirds is a 4-3 sensor. And a lot of times people don't realize this. I will pick up the Micro Four Thirds versus the Sony or the Fuji at times because I'm like, no, I want that more square format today. So if I'm shooting wider, if I want to shoot more panoramic, because our cameras are shooting a 4x6 format. And so these are a Micro Four Thirds is a 4-3 format. The sensor is more square. And it's actually great if you want to do square crops because you're cutting off a lot less from the edges. But Jason, you mentioned you're always chasing the dragon. maybe it's just because I have a little less cash flow the past few years because things like COVID and all that really did a number on photography. But what I've learned is that chasing the dragon isn't always new. And so I'm very particular in the use cameras I buy, right? There's a lot of old cameras that I'm like, oh, how boring. Like, that doesn't inspire me at all. And this is different for each person. But you'll find if you start actually watching videos about, I'm going to start doing reviews on basically only old cameras. No one sends me the new ones to review anyhow. And actually, I love watching videos of photographers going back and they're picking up a camera from 10 years ago and saying, what can we do with this? And you watch these videos and you start to realize we're kind of being flim-flammed by marketing because you can pick up these old cameras. And this isn't a very old camera, but this is. And would I recommend an Olympus EPL3 as your main camera? No, it's probably a little too old to be up to speed. But would I recommend an X-T3, which is now, what, 5 years old and not that valuable as your main? Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing you can't do with this. And sometimes the Dragon is a $50 lens that you found a little gem of on eBay that's just in perfect shape because it's like, you know what it is. You watched some videos. You studied it. You knew its history. The Dragon, for me, is an OM2 because the shutter sound is just glorious.
That's phenomenal.
and it's like holding a piece of jewelry in your hand. Yeah. So I will come in at 1 o'clock in the morning and just pick it up and listen to the shutter. I know that makes me mental. Like, I put a roll of film in it now and then and use it too. And I love doing that, but it's not always about, you know, oh, I'm cool. I shoot film. This also holds the lens. I will take this lens off of the Olympus, right? I'll take off this lovely little 50 millimeter 1.4 and put it on my Fuji or put it on my Sony or put it on my Micro Four Thirds and go shoot portraits with it. It's a phenomenal, which one is that?
FM2.
FM2. I've been wanting, send me that. The FM2 is too expensive. So I've been looking at FM1 because I really want a Nikon in my vintage. I have a fairly large film camera collection and all of them I use. If I buy a film camera, it's not just to sit there. I take it out and I go shoot with it. And it's very therapeutic.
This one just sits here, just so we're clear.
Put a roll in it, dude.
But like, it looks awesome.
No, it's a phenomenal camera. And this is another thing in your buying list. Maybe go buy a film camera. And the thing is with buying a film camera, whether it's an Olympus or something like that, the lenses you're going to get with that, they're also going to adapt to your other gear. So you're getting more than just a film camera. You buy a film camera with a great old 1.4 or 1.2 lens, and you're getting this phenomenal glass. Hollywood still goes back and they're using these old lenses because they have so much character. And this is another thing with these new lenses. I realize if we're shooting a razor sharp landscape, you probably want everything perfect, but even that's questionable. You know, you look at these old Stieglitz photos, it's overrated. You look at these old Stieglitz photos and things like that. You look at David Hamilton and their portraits. You look at the pictorialism in landscapes, and the most beautiful photos you've ever seen are usually not the sharpest. Now, sharpness is good. If I have a sharp lens, that's great. What I'm saying is, though, these lenses, new lenses also kind of have no soul. I use new lenses because they're practical, they get the job done, they focus, and they're sharp, and a lot of times you need that. But actually, I always try and put an old lens on during a portrait session because, like, there's just, you put an old Helios Russian lens or something like that. You know, we're always talking about bokeh and this and that. These messy old lenses that sometimes are razor sharp and sometimes aren't, they have character. And a lot of these new lenses don't even have character. So instead of going and buying the absolute greatest lens for your landscapes this year, get a good lens. You need a good all-rounder lens, right? Whether it's a prime, whether it's a zoom on your main body, right? I understand that. But maybe get it used and take that extra money and buy a couple of great vintage lenses because I don't care what you shoot, you're going to get great results out of them.
Right, and as it turns out for landscapes, you don't need fast glass for landscape.
No, in fact, in the end, you're all stopping down anyhow. And almost any lens is going to be sharp when you stop it down anyway.
Right.
And so, and you know, think about characteristics. We think about, oh, for the streets at night, yeah, I need a fast lens. Okay, that's true. But also, I can take these little Micro Four Thirds cameras that have unbelievably good image stabilization. I mean, the image stabilization in this Olympus compared to a Sony body, it makes it look like a child. I mean, being able to handhold, I didn't even realize this was a thing. until I started researching, like, hey, what other cameras are out there I should get up to speed? Because we get stuck in our ruts. And this is why I'll try. I may sell this in a year and get something else, and that's fine. But being able to shoot at 1 second handheld, it's like, well, why would I want to do that? I can use a tripod. That's true. And if you're in a landscape, you probably should do that, right? If you can, you should probably do it.
Right.
But there's a lot of creative opportunities that open up when you can handhold it 1 or 2 seconds.
Yeah, well,
I mean, it's wild.
Was it the camera movement, the intentional camera movement that's been going around these days, where they do the long exposure, but they move it around to get the blur in certain areas?
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, I know
all kinds of great stuff.
We go overboard with that sometimes. I know, and there's fads and trends. But the truth is, if I'm shooting the street and there's a taxi cab driving by, and I can go down to a half second and have this crystal clear scene with a blurry taxi cab that you can still see as a taxi cab, that's a creative choice that actually can take a very boring image. And so it doesn't mean that I now shoot everything at a half second, but I'm actually now, because I can, I'll take this on the street instead of the X100, which I clearly can't do this with. It doesn't have any IBIS. And I'll say, all right, I have this today instead of the X100. Let's shoot it half a second and see what happens. And the stuff that comes out from that is very interesting and just gives me a different perspective. So don't get stuck in any ruts, I guess, is what I'm getting at with our gear buyer's guide this year. And I knew we've gone long. We should wrap up. Just go out and try something different. It doesn't have to be new, right? You've got great lenses. You've got great lights. You've got great cameras. None of them are bad. Occasionally these brands release a camera that is bad, right? Like, just they miss somewhere, but it really doesn't happen very often. Right. Almost any camera you pick up from the past 5 years, you can shoot anything with.
Yep. I think I would want to end on what I said earlier, is find what you love to shoot with that. Whatever allows you to get out and track your creative vision down, shoot with that. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if it's film or a instant camera from the years past, or even the, what is it, the disposable cameras that they had at the weddings, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Years, whatever makes you happy.
And those are back.
Out there and
the disposable cameras are back, by the way.
Of course they are.
I mean, everything is going to come around, and that's how it works. And so the same goes for your software, right? I'm always making new tools, like I love using my new Pictorialist actions. So I'll throw a plug for those, because they're going to do things to any photo that's a throwback, but you're in control of. It's not some AI effect. It's about being a little softer, about getting some glows to those lights. I've been loving, you know what I've noticed as a side effect on this, of shooting at 1 second, even at night, when you shoot at 1 second, you start stopping down, right? To F5, 6, to F8, because it's so much light coming in. And so then you shoot at night at a half a second, and now you're getting these cool little aperture stars around things like streetlights that you would normally have to use a filter for, that maybe you don't want. So like every tool gives you these different creative options that you wouldn't have otherwise. Full frame versus medium format versus small sensor versus film. Same with software, right? Use what inspires you. Objectively speaking, and I haven't done my new 2025 review comparison, finished it yet, of Lightroom versus Capture One, but I'm using both these all the time. I'm testing things, trying to find, people are always asking me, what is my Lightroom alternative? So I'm always testing these other ones and doing comparisons. You can get good photos out of them, but the truth, objectively speaking, at $10 a month for Lightroom and Photoshop, nothing compares, which pisses me off, frankly. I totally get the people that are like, Gavin, I refuse to support Adobe in this. I still use Lightroom 6 and CS6. And I'm like, you know what? That's fine. And when I make my presets and actions over at SimFX.com, everything I make still supports Lightroom 6 and CS6. Sometimes I have to cut out a few features and redefine those actions a little bit, but they still do the same things, even though it might be easier to do in the latest versions. If you love Capture One is more expensive for less. That's the truth. But you get to be Capture One. It's like saying I'm on Apple. I don't use an Apple computer anymore because I got sick of it. Like in the early 2000s, Apples were making great computers for creators. Now Apple is selling trendy toys to see who can be the coolest. Like, buy the latest iPhone. It's literally the same with a different color, and you can buy it again so you can feel cool. And I'm not into that. Right. I don't care if I use people like, oh, you use P mode? That's lame. I could care less what people think about what mode I has, because the proof is going to be in the photos. I'm going to use whatever mode or whatever camera or whatever lens or whatever software is going to give me the best results or going to make me feel good. If Capture One makes you feel good, use Capture One. It's perfectly good. And the same goes for your cameras. Jason, it was good having you on again after a long time. I know we kind of had some hiccups today. Where can people find you at?
It's going to be really complicated. It is jasoneldridgephoto.com.
All right. Well, that's not too bad. I'll put it, of course, in the show notes. It will be linked in the show notes over at simeffects.com, where you can find me. But /podcast is where all the podcast stuff is at. As well as I'll try to dump a bunch of links for various things we've talked about today. We didn't actually recommend that much gear for a gear show, and yet I think we kind of recommended a lot of gear because there's so many options. And what I wanted is a show this year. I was actually pissed going to Walmart recently and like all these Christmas, Black Friday, Buen Fin, they call it here in Mexico, all these sales, everybody feeling like they have to go buy something. We have to prove that we're cool. We have to get the latest. And I was kind of pissed. I'm like, this kind of sucks. Like, this doesn't make me like Christmas that we all have to go out and buy the latest, coolest thing. And you know what? I haven't bought a new camera the entire year. I haven't bought a new lens all year. Now, I'm not saying we should never buy new ones. I mean, these companies do have to make some money, but they need to give us something that's actually worth buying. And in the meantime, if you don't have the budget for it, do not feel, I am not even bit embarrassed because I have this Micro Four. This is a glorious little camera. It's wild. I paid $600 for it. I have money left over that I can buy cool lenses with or that I can actually do other practical things with. I've changed my mindset is what I'm getting at, to where new to me is good enough. I don't care if it's in the latest and because it's going to work. And if it inspires you, use it. Jason, thank you for being here. Hopefully we'll get you back and some of the other oldies from our panel on here as we go forward on the Pro Photo Show podcast. Please keep spreading the word, subscribe, head over to the Shadow Hunters group if you want to join the discussion. Again, I'll put a link to that for this week's episode over on the podcast, the show notes page at simeffects.com/podcast. Thank you, Jason. We'll see you next time.
See ya.
Awesome.